Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Market Music with Fairbairn and Russell.
Hello and welcome to the Market Musings podcast with Fairbairn and Russell. And today it's our 50th, can you believe it, Kenny, our 50th podcast. How does that feel?
Well, I'm quite close to 50 years old soon, so it doesn't sound great for me.
Doesn't sound great for you. Well, we we've got a very special guest on the podcast today to celebrate our 50th. He's very well known, very popular. Some say maybe he's a bit like Marmite. You either love him or you hate him. Perhaps he's a little bit controversial at times. I don't know. But if we can have a drum roll, please, which I'll put in later. And if we can welcome Doc Holliday. Hello, Doc.
Hey, how are you doing, guys? You okay?
Yeah, very well. How are you?
I'm good. So you're on your 50th show?
Indeed.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Kenny's almost 50, and I should be hopefully getting my waist size up to 50 inches, all being well in the not-too-distant future as I sail off into retirement.
Oh! Right. Nice. Okay. That's good. That's good. Yeah. Nice. Are you looking forward to that?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Something that I've been pondering over for quite a long time, and I think that's something that's going to be happening in the not too distant future.
Oh. Good.
All right. Well, before we look into the future, Doc, we would like to go back into your past, if that's okay, because you're going to have a few stories, and it sounds like you've been in a bit of a life journey in your investing career. First thing I want to ask you before we go into that is the name Doc Holliday. What's the backstory in that? I mean, obviously, I seen a tweet the other day from you. You saying you used to love sitting down watching a Western with your dad on a Sunday. So I'm assuming there's a bit of that in your Twitter name.
Yeah, look, I mean, to be honest, we get down to the brass tacks of it is back in the olden days, you used to have these bulletin boards. They're still around, but they're a lot less prolific. And the first instruction was never put your identity out into public domain. So it was Christmas. I'd been reading bulletin boards. I was interested in the stock market. I'd kind of traded or I'd invested in companies when I worked in oil and gas and power, but it was more of, you know, there was no sort of rationale behind it. I would just go and work for Shell or BP on a shutdown on a contract for a 3-month period. And then when I finished, I'd go and put half the cash into that company. There was no rhyme or reason. It wasn't sophisticated in any way. So I'd got an interest in the markets for a lot longer than I've been doing this for probably about 10 years, but it actually spans over probably more like 15 plus. And I used to read up some of the bulletin boards. There was a really popular guy at the time called Netley Lucas. I think he was a bit of an alcoholic, but he was a fabulous guy because he had a huge insight into the market. And I think he was he lived in his attic with his mum. So if he's still around, I don't know. It's a long time ago, this, but I would doubt he is. But I mean, I used to read his content, and it was Christmas Day. My missus and the family were sitting around, all girls, four sisters and mum, sitting around drinking wine, cackling, and I was sitting watching TV with dad and granddad. And there it was. Tombstone was on the TV at the time. I kind of figured I'd seen it two or three times already. Mm. And I decided I wanted to contribute. It was at that point that I did it, and asked me for an avatar name, and that was the one that I selected.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, it's a good film, that. And he's quite a cool character, isn't he, as well?
I think he's probably a bit of an arsehole and a bit of a pisshead. And you know, I suppose the synergies between that character and myself in some respects. But, you know, it is what it is. I mean, I wanted to shake it off probably 2 or 3 years later. I got banned from all of these bulletin boards for being overly opinionated and perhaps just talking about certain subjects that those moderators weren't comfortable with. And I wanted to shake it off. I was getting more into the investigative blogging, you know, talking about companies that were total frauds, etc. I kind of partnered up with Tom Winifred back then and other people. And it was really advice from he and other people. He said, look, you might want to keep that avatar name as a bit of insulation. Anyway, naturally, I wasn't very good at hiding behind it for too long. So I made plenty of appearances at investor shows and events and a variety of things. But the name stuck. And actually, it's been a good thing from a branding perspective, but you know, it was never planned or
nothing behind it really. Yeah. So how long have you been actually involved in the market then?
Well, I mean, I go back probably sort of, well, like over 15 years. So
right. Okay.
I think I was about 25 when I first bought some shares in a company. Mm-hmm. You know, over 40 now, so it doesn't take a lot of working out. But as I say, it's really the last 10 years which has been where I've been honing my skills. And I suppose we all have to go through that baptism of fire of being torn away from big cap stories and, you know, yield paying type companies in the blue chip sector, which that's where everybody should have some exposure. But you get your head turned by the glitz and glamour of the junior markets, not to realize that it's you're swimming with sharks, and yeah, I guess we all take a few bites along the way, and it's how you learn to apply your trade as well. So yeah, it's not been plain sailing, that's for certain.
Did you do it full time, Doc? Investing is it your sort of main source of income?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've been doing that probably for about the last 5 years. Okay. I've got some other interests outside of the market, but you know, from I don't have any other employment. I'm totally reliant on myself and my wits. And I'm doing this full time. I've got lots of passions and interests, but for employment and cash generation, yeah, absolutely, full time.
All right. Well, leaving the markets aside just now, Doc, can we go back to when you were, you can go back as far as you want. You can go back to your school days if you want. You know, what did you do when you left school? What was your first job and stuff like that? Just to get a good background. I'll tell you why, because we had Mike Moles of Covango Resources on a couple of weeks ago, and it actually turned out that he was a school teacher first, and then a diesel mechanic, and then a geologist. You know, we weren't expecting that kind of a career path, so it's always interesting to get a backstory to see.
Yeah, well, definitely. I mean, I spoke to Brian Kinane the other day, and from Riverfort Corporate Finance or Global Opportunities or whatever the name is now. And you know, he was a software guy. He was a computer programmer. He was from that sort of Silicon Valley-esque type background. And now he's one of the big names in finance in the city, you know, around the city in the junior caps for years with YHA Global and now Riverfort. So yeah, look, I'm happy to answer. I mean, I left school arguably with a poor education. I went to a comprehensive school. Always had a lot of interest in trading. I would trade anything, playing cards. From being as young as I can remember, I would always buy and sell and trade and swap and always be trying to get ahead and an edge, you know. And I left school, as I say, not with the best education. I went into electrics. So I used to work on a weekend with an electrician, and then I started an apprenticeship. He suddenly run into a few problems not too far into my apprenticeship, maybe a year or so. And he did a disappearing act over to one of the Channel Islands, Jersey, left his wife, kid, the whole thing, and just kind of bugged out. So that kind of left me at a bit of a sticky wicket. Went into a mechanical engineering company, Drake and Skull, well-known around the north, quite well-known around the country. I'm not too sure where they're at right now. Picked up with them, and then that was kind of the entrance into the world of engineering. And it's quite long and lengthy, and I'm not going to bore you with it because I don't think it's that relevant, but generally worked in engineering, oil and gas, power, and a variety of different sort of sectors. So naturally, when I got involved or interested in the markets, being able to decipher some of the wording or try and understand some of the lingo, it was difficult. I mean, RNSs aren't wrote today as they were 10 years ago. I mean, it was really sort of corporate spiviness at its very best. So it was difficult to translate them. So a lot of the things I would do is just try and break it down and translate the parts that I understood. And that become quite key in understanding how relevant that news was. So yeah, that's pretty much the background, as brief as I can make it. If you want to ask any questions, feel free.
Yeah, and obviously the RNS, I mean, I still think they're overly complicated. And I mean, I love the Australian model. I mean, their RNSs are just fantastic. They're just, you know, they're full of pictures, they're colourful, they flow. All the information you want is there, and you don't have to put up this link that's hidden somewhere in the RNS in this country to get the information you want. I just wish the LSE would adopt a more Australian-esque system, but that's probably never going to happen. They're too stuck in their ways.
Bad though, isn't it? You know, you think about it. We the London market, you know, like New York City, all of this is, it's all part of the facade. It's how it works, you know. It's the whole, from grassroots up, it's the whole fake it till you make it type environment that we're operating in. And you know, the straightforward Australian approach, I would love that, because I'm a straightforward kind of guy. But unfortunately, it wouldn't fit in with that whole British bullshitting way of life. And I think there's way too much of it. You know, you go into the city and you go into the square mile, you're going to bump into loads of suits and really sort of well-spoken people. Go down the West End and it's the guy who's sitting with a pair of desert boots on, jeans and a £75,000 watch, you know, that on his wrist, that actually gives it away that's the guy with the money and not these tosspots in the square mile going on the luncheon circuit. But, you know, that's all part and parcel of the adventure, really, of learning how it all works and understanding a bit about it. I just think it's a lot. People pontificate a lot, don't they? It's pompous as well.
Yeah, I wonder if you know, COVID's going to change a lot of this. I mean, I wonder if a lot of these guys will suddenly realise, you know, I can just work from home. I don't need to get in the city anymore. We can do these Zoom calls. We can do whatever. I mean, I'm fortunate. I left my full-time job about, I don't know, 14, 15 months ago, and I have no desire to go to London. I don't particularly like it. So I'm quite happy. I can just sit up in Scotland and stay out of the way. But I wonder if there'll be a complete shift in the way the market works once we come out of this lockdown.
I think undoubtedly we're going to find that people can be productive from home. I made this comment on it, and I don't expect he would have read it, but there was Alan Sugar put something out the other day saying, you know, we need to get back into the office. It's where people cut the teeth and where they learn the trade. And I actually said, you know, if people are productive or more productive from home, surely there's the work-life balance. You know, you see these, it's a little bit like a sewer at 7 a.m. You know, all of these the rats come to surface and then they go back down at 5 or 6 p.m. And it's just, it's obscene, really. I mean, I don't like the city. I think it's way too overpopulated. And everybody's trying to go from, you know, one person's going in one direction, there's another one's passing going the opposite. It just seems totally pointless. It's not for me, but problem that you're going to find with finance, and certainly in the junior end of the markets, is it's not quite as sophisticated as people think, and it's not as honest as people would hope. So there's going to always be a need for face-to-face contact if you kind of feel where I'm coming from.
Yeah, there'll still be uses for that going forward. That brings me, you touched on something, I think, there. You mentioned conspiracy theories during the week in a couple of tweets. I know you've probably got a few. What's your latest one? Or what's your...
Well, there's loads of things that I could talk about, but, you know, I think sometimes you can muddy the water too much. People start thinking, you know, you're one of the sort of, what, the Tin Hat Brigade and all the rest of it. You know, you can go a bit far, but I do believe that the whole system is corrupt. I think it's just built by design for people to comply. So you look at the way that people are educated, you know, we're in a quite wonderful time now, because if you think about the likes of Google and Facebook and these types of newer institutions, they're going to take people on without degrees. They're going to bring people into the corporation, into the firm, who perhaps don't tick all of the old school boxes, but they've got energy and they've got passion and, you know, they're productive. And And I think that's something that we probably missed in our era. I mean, you know, you're nearly 50. I'm well into my 40s, and it's kind of like, I don't know if those opportunities existed, and the world is slowly changing. But I do think it's a boys' club. I think if you look at one of the things I used to comment on, and it's been a while since I've even thought about it, so forgive me if I cock it up, but I think the American GDP figure is designed from 17%, or the biggest contributing factor to the GDP figure in the US is comes from health. You know, it comes from private healthcare. So the GDP figure is designed to represent health, wealth, and prosperity. Yet the biggest figure that contributes to it is from healthcare. Meaning, for that percentage to keep growing and that number to keep growing, people have to be sicker and weaker. And so the whole thing is a total contradiction. You know, the word economy is, there's nothing economic about the city. There's nothing economic at all. You know, there's nothing economic about the economy. There's just so many things that conflict. And like I say, I could probably waffle on and go deep into it, and then I wouldn't be doing myself any justice because I'd sound like a lunatic. But I think if you start looking, stripping back and looking at some of these things, there's some really interesting contradictory points out there, you know.
Yeah, but there's definitely opportunities. I mean, as you say, what, to catch one of your phrases, you know, play the game, there's opportunities out there, and spot the cycles, and, you know, things like placings. You just know when a placing's coming sometime with a company, you can see it with the volume and the spike, and 9 times out of 10 it happens. I think I'm more of a long-term holder. I think you're a bit of a mix. You do some day trading. You've got some short-term holds, and you've got some long-term holds as well. So I was just going to try and get in your mindset of investing. So, Doc, your investment strategy. Can you summarise that for us? What you typically look for in a company, and, you know, what's the telltale signs? What's an opportunity for you? Or, you know, give us your insight of how your mind works.
I think so. My strategy, if you will, is it changes with the wind, because a lot of it's determined by wider market conditions. So, you know, I think we've over the last few years, we've seen like this real sort of big move up, 2016, 17, you know, a bit like shooting fish in a barrel. That's pretty much what's happened in the wake of COVID in March. So once you've got through that initial sort of chop at the knees for everybody, it's been quite brutal. If you're trading junior markets, you'll have felt it too. There's been this sort of massive sort of move up and huge amount of interest in the market again. So I guess what I'm saying is, you know, I'll flirt with the market when the market was ready for it, and, you know, the rest of the time I'm generally trying to keep a decent amount of cash available, because I don't believe that I'm anywhere near smart enough to be able to outwit the wide market. So I'm not going to be able to predict everything that's going to happen. Things will always happen in captures offside, and on that basis I want to be able to react to it. I'm going to make mistakes as well. I hear lots of people saying, you know, don't average down compounding losses. I wouldn't advise it, but I've been trading the market long enough that if I do make a mistake, my judgment's wrong, or something changes in the world, I believe that I can get out of it in most cases. So I like to have a bit of cash for that. And yeah, I mean, strategy is I'm in as long as I need to be to make a return. So it can be a minute, it can be a day, it could be a week, a month, a year. And you know, that broadly changes based on the kind of positions that I take. So, you know, I can give you an example. I watched Eddie Stobart come back to market. I've got some good sources. I know the industry well. So I made a few phone calls. And I come to the conclusion Eddie Stobart wasn't going to go bust overnight. But what was going to happen is people were going to focus on the fact that they've got a huge contract with Tesco's. Most people wouldn't have realised that in order to insulate Tesco, they would have had to subcontract quite a substantial amount of their work out. So to protect and indemnify Tesco should the business go under. So it meant that whilst those contracts were huge, they weren't going to get the big returns off it. But I knew full well that the market would just focus on all of these contracts and the size of them and the name. And they wouldn't dig too deep down into it. So, you know, I didn't know where the bottom was, but I was buying them at 7p, 6p, 5p. And then they went from 5 to 15. So I'm in at 6. I'm getting out in the double digits. You know, it was really easy. 2 or 3 days later, or whatever it was done. Mm-hmm. Job done. Yeah. And then it was a case of, oh, I've had a decent move here. there's quite a lot of risk there, and I perhaps didn't appreciate it as much. And I started to look at other opportunities in other companies, and Clipper Resources was trading at about £1.30. They'd been up at £3. They'd got institutions coming onto the register who would continually still want to back the company. They'd got a nice little dividend, so it was all there. But because of COVID, it had just taken a right spanking. So I had a bit of good looking fortune and a bit of wind in my sails with Eddie Stobart. So I jumped into Clipper, and the government started to relax working times directives for drivers. And I knew that was going to be significant because it meant that productivity would increase. And of course, the price of fuel was collapsing because nobody was moving. So it meant that the margin was going to be bigger. So, you know, that thing went from £1.30 to £3. Great. Two very different ways of looking at companies in the same sector, but still the same outcome. And, you know, I guess I sound like a bit, you know, really special guy. You know, he's got them all right. I don't get them right. I get loads of them wrong. Mm. And I've gone through that cycle of going from zero to hero and back again. So I expect that will come again at some point. But that just gives you a bit of an idea of how I look at things.
I was just going to ask, Doctor, you'd invest in sort of, I'm not going to say everything and anything, but you don't obviously focus in one particular industry or sector as such.
I did do. I mean, I think, you know, people would say I'm renowned for resource stocks.
Okay.
And, you know, depending on whether you want to sort of take the analogy of, I am Marmite, you know, you said it earlier on, like, people don't know who you are. They don't know the person behind it. They see this character, this dot colored character, and they think that's a fair representation of you. And that's okay if that's what people want to believe, but there's a lot more to it.
Mm.
But, you know, if you're one of these people who doesn't particularly like me, you'll say he likes those resources, snake oil guy, he's a resource guy because he can, you know, they can roll out this big story and it's all this big pump and dump, blah, blah, blah. Mm. And that's fine. But go try, do it yourself and see how successful you are with that strategy. I don't get involved in groups. I don't get involved in these arenas where I believe it's a sound chamber, an echo chamber. It's very one dimensional because I want to be in an arena where everything's public. And if people want to challenge it. If you want to ask me a question. You want to challenge it. You want to abuse me. I mean, I've got thick skin, so I'll take a fair bit of that. But eventually I'll just tell you to go and do one. But, I kind of figure that's where I want to be. So that's the negative side of being in resources. The other side is people will say, well, you know, he's been out to a few different sites. He's looked at a few things. He's worked in industry, and therefore he's getting ahead. And that's, you know, it's down to the interpretation of the listener and what their personal of me is. It's going to really determine how they take what I'm saying. So originally it was natural resources, but look, I've worked around in a lot of different areas, and I understand how trends work in markets. So I will trade anything over any time horizon at any given point in time. The thing that will dictate my interest is the wider market. So if we get, and I talked about this 2-3 years ago, you know, we're going to get a black swan event. It comes every so often. Nobody could predict COVID, but you know that in the next few years, everything will settle down. Everything will be rosy in the garden again. And boss, something's coming out the left field. And you've got to always have a strategy for that. A, how to protect and indemnify yourself and protect your capital. And B, how can you benefit from it? And as horrible as it sounds, there's lots of people benefit from COVID-19. And we've seen it with some of these huge spikes in valuations. And good for them.
Yeah. There's opportunities all the time. I must admit, I actually liked one of your picks, must have been a couple of months ago. It was Motive Bio. And I think I'd seen the tweet, it just popped up in my timeline, and you'd invested purely for just the market cap only. And I must admit, I had a price up on my screen 2 or 3 times that day. I think it was 0.05 of a pence. I can't remember. It was right down at the arse of it.
There's a bit more to it than the fact that the market cap was just 200 grand. But what I felt would happen is somebody would go out and they would want to bend in a hand sanitizer business or a company that made latex gloves or something. And they'd want to get to market quickly. And if you're looking for a vehicle that's already in the market and it's in that space, it's in that pharma space, then it would be a perfect target. But there was also the argument that Hercules, who was the fund in the US, had invested I think it was $20 million into the Ilkaprim compound, and they converted their debt to equity at 0.42p. So that was at 0.005. There was another decimal point down. And this was almost eight times more. So my view was, well, if Hercules want to see a return, it's got to go higher. If someone jumps in and fans in on this, it's going to go higher. At the time, the chloroquine thing had come out with Trump talking about, you know, how they were going to start fast-tracking things. The FDA were going to be more relaxed. And actually, Ilkaprin, the compound that they're actually trying to sell, that they did a lot of work on, it had some success at clinical trials. And the only reason they didn't take it into phase three of the clinical trials was because of funding. There wasn't funding to take that into trials in that area, but it had really, really positive responses with another drug for people who were vented. And at the time, you can, even though we know now that ventilators never really become as significant as perhaps one would have thought, certainly then it was quite poignant. So, you know, all of that coupled together, it was a no-brainer. As it was, something totally different happened, but it went up something like 25 times its multiple, maybe more.
Yeah, it was, I get 30 bagger at its peak or something. It was crazy. But I mean, that's you just need one of them a year, you know, or even one every 2 years, you know, and it totally transforms your portfolio. So it's
I've done this, like I would say, I've done this probably every year or two in my time in the market. So arguably, I'm good at doing this. I must be really bad at some of the other stuff because I'm giving the money back to the market as well, like everybody. So, you know, maybe what I need to do is actually spot, you know, those companies and do nothing else. But problem is when you're submerged into the market, Kenny, it's difficult not to want to get involved with more things. It's quite an addictive environment, isn't it? It's hard to be measured. It depends on what your personality is.
No, it is hard. It's hard. Yeah, it's hard to be, you're right, it's hard to be measured.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Doc, I mean, I don't know if you know my backstory, but I got wiped out totally about 2009, 2010, round about then. And I actually fell out of the market and just buggered off and done my, you know, got on my life for 4 or 5 years. And then I suddenly realised that I can trundle along doing this job and just get by, or I can go and try and make something of life, you know, and get back to where I was. So that's what I'm trying to do just now. But you know, I was taking far too many risks back in the six-figure portfolio or whatever then, and I mean, I blew it all. I've got a screenshot somewhere. It ended up being worth £3.48. It was absolutely ridiculous what I'd done. Looking back on it now, I just shake my head. But I was early, what was I, 30-something, 35, 36. You think you're invincible, so you do. I'm older and wiser now, so but. No, but you learn a lot of lessons and you try and take them forward. And
it's heartbreaking, Kevin. You see it all the time. How many people have been furloughed from work? They've got a mortgage break on the house. They've actually got money in the pocket because they're not going down the pubs or doing whatever they might be doing. So they've got this disposable cash. So they're coming into the market. Then you've got all of the guys that are that like a flutter. So your football gamblers, your horses and all of that, they've got nowhere to go. So they're coming in. Then you've got your gambling addicts. We forget about them, but there are people that are addicted to this. So they've got nowhere to go and lose the money except in a virtual environment. So they're looking for something else. So we've now got, I've had something like 1,000 new followers since COVID-19, and that is massively out of kilter to the amount of new followers that you would get. But lots of people are saying the same thing. You might have seen it on your own accounts. Loads of new people. These are the guys that are going to either make, the worst thing they can do is make a lot of money fast because they're going to change the way that they live their life. So they're going to get the new car, the new house and everything else. And then in 6 months, they're going to blow up. They're going to be problematic. They're out there. Then there's your guy who has a bit of, you know, he's had a bit of success, but now he's gone from trading his $5,000 size to 50 and 100. And he doesn't understand how to scale up. He doesn't understand risk management. And these are the people that end up really blowing up epically. And there's just not, because of the constant churn of participants in the market, there's very few people that have been around long enough, you know, that can actually tell the tale. That's the truth of it. So, you know, as much as you've had a bad experience, and I hope you come back from it and you're doing something creative now, but those lessons are going to be key. And actually being in the game long enough, you'll always have some good luck. Everybody has luck, bad luck and good luck. But if you've been around a long time, it helps you sort of, learn the dance moves on the dance floor when the music starts to play, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And what would be, what would you be, were you giving advice on sort of risk management and scaling up? I mean, I know it, it does come down to experience and you've got a lot of it, but I don't know, could you say anything to these sort of newbies? I don't know, as a little bit of advice.
Well, listen, the best thing that these guys can do is if you've just got another 10 bagger on, you know, AVCT, you want to realize some of your profit as soon as you can, because if you can't accept that this is a unique situation you're in, then you've got a problem. And if anybody thinks the markets are easy because it's been like shooting fish in a barrel the last couple of months, it isn't. It's going to get a lot harder. It's going to be tough. And you know, a lot of these big names that you've been following, they're going to disappear, because the ones that have actually genuinely made a lot of money are probably going to take a break and go off and do something. And people are going to be scrabbling around. De-risk. Look after your capital. If you put 10,000 quid in, make sure that 10,000 is back where it come from. Make sure you've got a bit of cash around you, so if there's any wild swings, you can be reactive to it. And if you've had a big winning trade, so we've seen, you know, a number of companies, you multi-buy was an example Kenny used. If you've gone another 10 bagger on multi-buy, go and take 2 weeks off. So de-risk, take your cash, sell, and then have 2 weeks, because what happens is it's a little bit like going out on a Friday night and you go out with your mates and you go and pull a couple of girls and you have a good night in a nightclub. Saturday, you're going back to the same place and you kind of say, well, not having the same luck. Well, you know, the reality is it's the luck word that's coming into it, and you've got to be measured. And we can get overly confident by winning trades. So you start to think you can, you know, invincible is the word that Kenny used, but we start to believe we can walk on water. We've had one winner, then we've gone into another winning trade and another. And then suddenly you're going from your 10, 20 grand, you know, 20, 30,000 pound clip position. And now you know, you're the big swinging dick with your 100 grand position in something that you're sure is going to work. And nearly always it bites you on the ass. And then you're learning the hard lesson without being able to regulate the risk. And suddenly you're back where you started, thinking, well, what was all that about? And it happens so often.
Yeah, definitely does. Definitely does. Do you still do any placings, Doc, or have you sort of left that behind? Are you still keeping your?
I've been through sort of cycles in this. When loads of people were taking placings, I wasn't really that interested. I was a bit late to the party when 2014, 15, 16. A lot of it was going on. Things that used to interest me a lot more was taking out distressed sellers. So back then, if you had the likes of Lansted or Bergen or something like that sitting in a company with 400 or 500 grand, I was happy getting involved with different groups of people to take the seller away, or if you've got somebody who's distressed that's in the market. So it didn't matter what the instrument was, but getting rid of the monkey off the back, and then you'd be able to get a bit of life into it, and I found that way more compelling than just, you know, placings, because I think the placing model is generally quite unambitious. The brokers are in it to give you this cold pitch. So for anybody who's never participated in a placing, you get a call and they phone you up and they tell you everything about this company. And often people who start wanting to go down that route, they feel beholden somehow you're one of the lower echelons than these brokers. So they don't question them a lot. And what I would say is, if you're going to go into that game, question them about everything, and you suddenly find they don't have a lot of answers because they've got a pitch. And that pitch is, once I've sold you your stock, once we've filled the book, we're moving on to the next one. And the company's idea is, once we've got our money and we've able to pay ourselves for the next year, we don't really give a toss about you either. And it's quite a perverse environment. So yeah, placings for me, I do the odd one. I've done a couple probably in the last year. But they're not for me predominantly, Kenny. I mean, I think there's better ways to make money in the market. And I think if you're enterprising and you understand what you're doing, you can make money. It's not a foolproof way of making returns, which is the misconception people have got to.
Yeah, we actually had a broker on about 6 weeks ago. It was a guy from Wolf of Wall Street, Oakmount Stratton, or Stratton Oakmount, sorry.
Stratton Oakmount, yeah.
I don't know if you listened to that podcast, Doc. It was a guy called Michael Donadella.
It's
worth listening to. Della Donna, yeah. Oh dear, I've not been drinking, honest. I've not been drinking yet. But no, his pitch was great because he tried it in Mark, so he did. And he pretty much got Mark every time. But he's pitched down to a T. It was really, really good. That's worth listening to, even just for that 5-minute segment. Good. He was a good guy. So he was. But all right, I think we've talked enough about the markets, unless you've got anything to add, Mark.
Well, I just following on from that last point, Doc, I mean, about companies, once they've raised, you know, they don't really care about you anymore. And you know, that's definitely true in some cases. But would you agree that there are some companies that are genuinely, you know, aligned with investors, the management team are genuinely on the shareholders' side?
I would say that I would say that the majority of bad companies that exist in the junior markets, I'm only talking junior markets.
Junior markets, yeah, yeah.
My area of play, if you will. I would say the majority of bad companies with bad directors, bad models, never come into the market with bad intentions. I think it happens over time. And I think, you know, people who've got, who are hardworking with a good outlook, with good ideas, I think they get stifled because the whole system is, its nose is at the trough from the day that they come to market. So they go and make the application to join the stock exchange. They deal with the LSE and the UKLA and everything else. And then they're told, you know, you need a financial PR company. You need all of these people around you. And it just lacks a lot of ambition. So then the information that comes in is generic and it doesn't work. So they come with these great ideas and they hit the market and then they don't hit the ground running and then nothing works. And then they're almost having to learn how to survive the fight once they're in it, just like investors do. So I wanted to make that point because I can be critical of companies, and there are lots of people who are critical of companies, but I believe that most people are trying to work out the next move and how to survive once they're in the game. And if they align themselves with the wrong people, the wrong advisors, or they find themselves in the wrong environment, it can dictate the outcome. So yeah, I do think there's loads of good people in the market. I think there's loads of good ideas. I feel that there's perhaps not the flexibility or that sensation of being liberated enough to just go out and be able to, you know, apply your trade, because there's all of these different things that you have to contend with running a PLC. One of the things with a PLC is if you're a habitual failure, you keep getting paid, which that wouldn't happen in the private sector. The other side to it, you've got to manage investors. You've got to try and find all of these people around you that you're paying for that actually give you a good service, and often you don't get it.
Yeah, so it's almost a fundamental problem with the LSE itself then.
I definitely think so. I think, you know, what I'm saying is, good ideas aren't always the most successful ones because, you know, you can have the best asset in the world, but you can have terrible management and the two don't go together and that asset never gets fully exploited and therefore it can be passed on. And that's why you see companies that have had, you know, hold of an asset and 10 years later it surfaces again in a different jurisdiction with on a different exchange and suddenly they go and have like huge fines. You know, you see it all of the time. So, you know, those assets, they've not been hidden away from the world. Often they've been in someone else's hands and due to poor management or poor technical teams or whatever, the moons aren't aligned on that occasion and therefore it's not worked. So yeah, I think there's loads of good companies with lots of good ideas and good assets. But the problem is you've got to have good management and loads of other things to go with it. And sadly, we just don't see enough of that.
Yeah, I was going to say, talking of good assets, Doc, I actually quite like one of the companies that you're quite vocal on, Chesterfield Resources. But every time I think about investing in it, it seems to be at its peak. It's been on a kind of 1.5p to 5p cycle 2 or 3 times in the last year or so. Give me a wee overview of that because it does interest me. And so I've been on holiday in Cyprus. It's a wonderful place. So what's your thoughts in Chesterfield?
Well, I've got a massive bias because I've got a position in there for a couple of years, and I've been there because I have a house there, so I spend a lot of personal time there. And I've been to site a few times and met the guys and the team and all the rest of it. If you apply the same logic, it's been through the cycle, you're going to get an opportunity lower down to buy the shares. That's fine. What we do know is that they're going to go out and do some drilling. If that yields some results, maybe you won't get that opportunity again. I don't know. What I would say is all of the money that went into that company predominantly went into that company at 5p and 7.5p. And that cash went in from people who are mining guys. So, you know, CEO from a company over in Canada, you know, people that are technical guys. You know, O'Brien's ex-Lundin, Parker's ex-First Quantum. The chairman is entrepreneur. He's had some successes with his own investments. And, you know, the original company, HK Exploration, was owned by an Australian geologist who'd been in country for 6 years. So when I went out there and met him, I knew he knew the landscape well. I don't speak great Greek, but I understand enough and I can speak enough to know when people are being friendly and when they're not. And this guy had a great relationship. So for me, it's important to see how these guys were operating in a London company in Cyprus, knowing there's a massive cultural divide. When you go and stay on holiday in a hotel, everybody's nice to you. It's the job to be. But when you actually, you know, go in some of the villages and things can be slightly different. Greek people are extremely friendly. At the same time, they're protective about what they're doing. You know, they want to retain their own interests in their own land and their own everything. So I was keen to learn what the relationship was like on the ground. And pretty quickly, I realized that the relationship was excellent. There was a lot of data out there which had not been and still has not been really focused on. So the UN, for example, went and did a lot of work out there. The VMS side of things has had huge amounts of interest, you know, globally, because if you're a geologist and you want to start looking at VMS, it's one of the places on the planet that you'll go to learn about it. So I think there's a lot of interesting things with Chesterfield, and I think it's taken a couple of years to get to the point that I actually thought it was at when I first went. So there's some naivety on my side there, but you can go and walk the ground, you know, Evlameni, for example, and you can find slag on the ground from when they've been smelting back in Roman times. It's everywhere. There's outcropping all over the place. There's, you know, you can pick copper pyrite up off the floor, which is, as you'll know, it's fool's gold, you know. It's everywhere, but all of this is indicative of, you know, encouraging geological science to the layman. And next door was the Limni pit, which was commercial for 30 odd years until the Turks invaded and there was the occupation in 1974, and everything slowed down then because the country was divided and there was a bit of a war, and then they had all of these great big finds in South America, and copper become cheaper to produce, and therefore the whole thing in Cyprus lost its way. But you know, go back and look. You know, Cyprium is Latin for copper, and Cyprus is Cyprium. So you know, the fact that the Romans named the island after the product gives you a good idea how much they found there, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. No, I need to choose my entry point in that one, but no, I might pick your brains in that offline at some point. Mark, I stole your thunder, I think. I'll let you jump back in.
There's only a couple of things. And while we're talking about other companies, another one I believe you're sort of interested in, Doc, and are quite positive about is Regency Mines. And I sort of share a similar interest. I wonder what is it you like about Regency Mines?
Yeah, look, we've got to make this clear for listeners as well, because I have no problem sort of blowing my own trumpet. So I just want to, again, for their benefit, I got Regency Mines all wrong. You know, I come into this at 2.75p when the management team changed, and they're trading down at 1, 1.25, 1.5 now. So, or wherever they are, you know, the point I'm making is I didn't get it right, but the rationale, I believe, will still come through. And that is, there's very little enterprise value given to its Mambare assets, and now they've got the debt on the Wawo Gap. There's no real value attributed to that. You've got these battery storage plants up in the north and now down in Cambridge. And they can, if you go down, I think there's a company in Mayfair called Iona Energy, and they're big into all of this. So there's a big market for it, but once you've got them up and running, they'll start to spit out cash pretty quick. The government are getting behind them. There's grants, etc. So I think there's good opportunity in that space. It's not kind of rock and roll, but cash flow can come very quickly from them. So you've got this huge big asset over in Papua New Guinea. You've got some vanadium, I think, in Canada, which is going to have some exploration done over the summertime, and then you've got this near term revenue. And if you go and take that, and then you put the model of Sound Energy when James Parsons became the CEO. And I knew James when he was the CFO 8-9 years ago. And you go and look at that model and you layer it on top. It's exactly the same. And what they did is in Italy, they got these producing oil and gas assets that just needed a little bit of work. They got them online, generated enough cash to cover the G&A. So it meant that any money that come into the business went into the ground. And then they started to go after these big elephant assets. And that's how Sound Energy went from 20 million to 800 million fully diluted. And he did it over about a 4 or 5 year period. And I think that whilst he's extremely unpopular today, James Parsons is an entrepreneur. He's enterprising. He's exciting. He's dynamic. He's about as popular as AIDS in the 80s right now. But I can almost assure you that at some point, people will start to feel, you know, a bit more about him. He's got a certain kind of personality, and he's not a lazy man. He's a hardworking fella. So I backed him, and so far I've been wrong, and I've got no, you know, I don't make no bones about it. If I was the best trader in the world, I wouldn't, but I'm not, and therefore I've made an error of judgment on the entry. But it's £1-2 million market cap tomorrow. If it gets to, you know, 3.5-4 million, I'm in the money. And can I see it going to 30 or 20? Absolutely. I don't think it's going to be a difficult task. And I think if you layer the model from Sound onto this, and if you weren't around then, you wouldn't know. Mm. And you start looking at what it's creating there, I think it's got many, many synergies. And look, Mark, to be perfectly honest, he's been involved in oil and gas for as long as I can remember. It's the only mining role he's taken on. So you've got to ask yourself, why has he gone into this space? To me, it's a step change in the way that he looks at the business moving forward, and that's what excites me. This is the standout change in the way that he's been working for the last 9 years.
Right, and so are you a fairly new investor in Regency, like in the last year? You've not been in for years.
I literally bought it because of his involvement. Right. Nothing before that.
Okay,
I've got no interest in the legacy business or the history.
Yeah.
I understand it's not the most popular vehicle. In some respects, I wish James picked a different vehicle because I was backing it for him, not for Regency as the legacy.
Yeah.
But I do believe that they'll do a good job of weeding out, you know, where the weakness is and the value, and we'll see, you know, we'll see how things go in the next 6-12 months.
Yeah, no, we will, absolutely. Oh well, that's good. I wonder if we could just perhaps finish on going back to Doc Holliday, the character, the persona, or whatever. And you know, I said at the start, a bit like Marmite, maybe a bit controversial. I wonder why you think that is. Obviously, you've been in the markets for a long time. You've been making your income from it for 5 years. So clearly, you must have a lot of time to research lots of different companies to decide what you think is a good company to invest in. Do you think is the reason that some people don't perhaps like what you say? Is it because you are vocal on companies you don't like and you almost call it out?
I'm way too opinionated, aren't I, Mark?
Right, let's be honest.
I've got way too much. The reality is you know why I'm probably not that popular, and I'm sure Kenny does as well. That's the thing. I have a self-awareness. I've got way too much to say for myself, but right. I just find it that, you know, I've spent a long time in the markets, and I spent a long time not sort of saying the way that I felt about certain things. And as I'm getting closer towards the end of my journey, and I would say I'm on the last leg of my journey now, I feel a lot more compelled to try and share the rationale as to how we're making these decisions, because when you come into the markets you always get some smart ass. They make loads of great calls, but they don't give you any color to the picture. There's no rationale or rhyme or reason as to what they're saying, and they want to hide behind that veil of that secrecy side of it. For me, I'm quite the opposite. I want to come out and sort of say, look, there's the fag packet, there's the calculations, and that's what I've done. And by the way, you know, I've just looked at this company. You're trying to trumpet to me about, I won't name it, but I've made a lot of vocal comments about a company that was trading at 48p, and it was last time I looked, it was down below 18p. It's lost 2/3 of its value. And it's because it was just utter nonsense what these people are putting out. And if I can see that it's nonsense, I'm going to have a go at it, because I feel that there's too many people out there that will just push this one-dimensional agenda for their own means. Because when people come into the markets, they get burnt, they get hurt themselves, and they start to realise it's a little bit like one of these abuse institutions. you come into it and not nobody feels that they're going to participate in it themselves. Suddenly they've gone from being abused to becoming the abuser. We see a lot of it in the markets, and then people explain it away as it's okay. And the reason I'm not like this because, you know, I'm bullshy I'll be brave, and I can be, you know, extremely pig-headed up to the point that I can be obnoxious with it, and I'm aware of that. So I'm trying to become a better person as a result of all of this. But the whole podcasting and the public presence was a bit of a journal of my life. And if I could go back and change some of the things, I would do. And, you know, if I could change some of the my own actions, I probably would do. But then, you know, that's all part of growing and being a person. But I think that's what it is. And maybe because people think I've got an unfair advantage over them in the market because I've got big contact networks all over the place, you know, London, Dublin, into the States, over to Australia. And a lot of that boils down and back to the work that we've not really talked about, but in the early days, I was doing a lot of investigative coverage on companies. So forensically looking at businesses and saying there's too many, I don't believe in consistent coincidences, and there's way too many, there's something not right here. And then following your nose and, you know, I come from a background where, you know, my grandfather helped raise me, he was an ex-cop, so maybe I had that sort of influence from him, I don't know. So I spent loads of time looking at these things. And then you reverse the other way, Mark, where you say, right, now I can see how these companies are operating and it's kind of bent, but it doesn't matter how many times I point it out, nobody's going to listen. So now I'm going to go the other way and I'm going to point it out, but I'm going to trade them too. So, you know, the amount of times that I've been quite vocal on a company and not necessarily uber bullish, but stripping it back and saying, no, I think this is probably a major con coming down the pipe here, but this is what I think will happen based on historical, because these guys who run these companies, they never change the spots. They never change the model. It's always the same. So they just rinse and repeat the same process. And if you can work out the way that they operate and you can make your entry at the right point in the cycle, you can actually trade them on the long tack and rarely make a positive comment. And I've done that many times. So anyway, and that doesn't always fill people with warmth and glee, because I think we, as humans are quite social animals, and therefore they want to come together, and that's why we have community colonies. So it's easy to get involved and feel safe in numbers. And if you're in this little group and this little pack and you feel safe in numbers, well, you know, when you start getting something that comes and threatens that, then you generally don't respond well to it, and I'm that person at times to people.
No, fair enough. Yeah, cool.
Yep. I'm actually disappointed, Doc. I meant to say at the beginning there, I was going to have a virtual swear box for this podcast, but I've probably sworn more than you. So it was going to be a charity thing, but you've been very well behaved, so we can't have that swear box. Maybe we'll have one the next time. And we can just have a free for all, and we can have a rant, and we can make a good donation to charity somewhere along the line between us.
The reality, Kenny, is, you know, people, I am that pickled egg and pie type guy. You know, I probably, if you walk past me in the street, I'm not the best kind of dressing person. I'm a big mouth as well, and you know, I generally just do the things that suit me. And it's not everybody likes that. You know, if you don't comply with the way society has an expectation for people to behave, it catches them a bit off guard initially. But, you know, for me, walking down the riverbank where I live, doing a bit of fishing, I've got a kayak, I'll do that. You know, I love getting out in the mountains. I've been all around the Cairngorms climbing. You know, I love all that sort of stuff. I'm actually, the reason that I'm probably, I swear too much, and I'm like a bottle of pop, you know, with some of the way that I act, is I'm like a caged animal. When I'm away from the outdoors, I feel caged, and it brings out a side to me that's not the best. So you want to catch the best side of me, you'll probably catch me going down the river on my boat or something like that. You'll see a much happier person. So yeah, I've tried my best though, because Mark comes across as a really sort of salt of the earth, good, honest, decent living man. I'm not too sure about you, Kenny, but I mean, I'm behaving for his benefit, if anybody's.
Yeah, we'll just keep it that way. No, we have our wee exchanges offline, and I don't mind it. I quite like a bit of banter and a bit of a bit of carry on. It's we're all different, so we're entitled to opinions. What is it I said the other day? Opinions are arseholes. We've all got one, yeah, so we just got on with each other, and that's the end of it. But it was great having you on, Doc, and hopefully you'll come back on, maybe even number 100 if you're if you have not sailed off into the retirement sunset by then.
Yeah, look, I mean, to be honest, any time I used to do a lot of this a few years ago. I mean, it's not something that I get asked as often to do, maybe because I've pissed off the people that used to ask me, but you know, I kind of figure that I followed Nick Leeson on a podcast with a group, two guys, two blokes trading, and they vanished and disappeared. And then, funny enough, I spoke to Nick not too long ago, and we're gonna do one together, hopefully. So, you know, it can lead to lots of different things, and hopefully this will lead to something a bit more exciting than listening to me ramble on and talk a bit of shit to you, you know. Hopefully, yeah,
it's good to have the podcast, because we've met and talked to some people we would never ever have met in our lifetimes. You know, with guys in America, guys in Israel, Abu Dhabi. You know, and it increases your network vastly. So it does, because one person says, "Oh, such and such is interested in coming on as well," and it's great. It's a great way of spending an hour. You know, three or four times a week, just talk to people about different subjects. Some of them I've not got a clue about, but you do a quick, you know, quick bit of research, and these guys come on and they tell you about your life, and some of the stories are fantastic. You know, you might as well tell them.
Yeah, but Kenny, to be honest, there's a massive, like, there's a lot of romance in the markets, and the message that I just want to leave the listeners with, really, your audience, is there's a lot of romance. There's loads of people out there that there's a massive fake it till you make it society, the fancy cars, the nice sharp suits and all that. The reality is very different. You know, the reality is very different. And just cut your cloth accordingly. Don't try and take giant leaps at the beginning. We've been trading since, you know, the time, biblical times, Egyptian times, since hieroglyphics existed. People have always traded. It's not going to just disappear tomorrow. You don't have to be in a rush. If you can use this podcast or any other forms of way to just learn a little bit more about what you're getting involved in, take that opportunity with both hands, because once you've lost the money, very difficult to come back, as I'm sure you know. And look, like I say, it's not all been plain sailing. We've not talked about a lot of it today, but I've had some horrendous losses. I've had legal claims against me, I've had death threats, I've had police come down to my house. So, you know, there's a lot of things, but by that persona and that character and just being way too opinionated, it's not always been, you know, a fair game of cricket, if you know what I'm saying. Mm. But I just encourage everybody to take the opportunity to learn as much as they can. And if you're providing a network that people can become submerged into and learn from, then all the better to you, and you know, good luck with it.
Perfect. Yeah, great way to end. Well, thanks very much, Doc, for giving up your time. And like I say, we hope we'll see you at number 100. Have you got anything to add, Mark, before we sign off and get for beer o'clock?
No, I'll let you get your Chinese, Kenny. But yeah, thank you, Doc, for coming on and talking to us. It's been very, very, very good to have you on. To thank you for that. And as you say, you know, as Kenny said, you know, we have met lots of different people on the podcast, and we learn so much. And I was quite excited to talk to you, because you do have this persona, you know, that comes across on Twitter, and you know, it's nice to learn a little bit more about you, you know. Well, and I think we've done that today, and you've you know, made a few things quite clear, and I've really enjoyed it. So thank you very much for your time. And maybe we have talked, me and Kenny, when lockdown ends, of doing maybe a little Fairbairn and Russell on tour, and go and actually physically meet some of the people that we have done a podcast with, particularly the regulars. So maybe we should come down and get on a boat with you and do something there.
yeah, definitely. I mean, to be honest, it's, you know, there's mileage to getting out there. And the network side of it is hugely important. It's not always... it doesn't always yield the biggest financial returns, but over the course of time, I believe it will do. So yeah. I think what I'm saying is, you go do loads of different things in life. You think, why am I giving up all this time? Am I getting paid enough? Do I get remunerated sufficiently? But it's, once you've built that network, you'll be remunerated quickly, and that's what you're looking for, whether it be from your own investments, whether it be from growing this brand. I don't know, but I'm sure you'll find that that's what happens, so stick with it.
Yeah, cool. Perfect. All right. Okay, cheers, Doc. Thanks for your time.
Yep, thank you, Doc.
So, anyway, enjoy the rest of the weekend.
Well, do it.
You too, Doc. Cheers. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye. Yeah.
See you later.
Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Fairbairn and Russell. Tune in next time.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.